Being prepared for an emergency. The devastation from Hurricane Michael reminds all of us that natural disasters happen, and it's a good idea to be prepared when they do. But what does that mean exactly, being prepared? Well, the answer is personal and depends on many factors such as, do you have pets, mobility issues, refrigerated medication, a generator, small children? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, emergency preparedness experts join us to help think through these issues and help us all make a responsible and effective plan for when the next ice storm, windstorm, cyber outage, fire, flood, or other disaster strikes. What are your questions about being prepared? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. With winter fast approaching and news of devastation caused by Hurricane Michael still in the headlines, today we're going to turn our attention to what all of us can do to prepare for a natural disaster. Joining me in the studio, John Ross is a disaster program manager with the Red Cross. Gail Rice is with Avangrid Corporate Communications. And joining us from our Bangor studio, Susan Falloon. She's Special Projects Coordinator and Public Information Officer with the Maine Emergency Management Agency, or MEMA. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you taken steps to prepare yourself and your family in case of a natural disaster? If so, what did you do? And if not, what's preventing you from doing it? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here and joining us today. And Susan Falloon, I want to start with you because was it just last week that there was that big EAS test? And I'm wondering if you can explain what that was, why that happened, and how Maine was part of that.
Yes, it was just last week. I think it was anyway. It was October 3rd. And so what that was a test of the National Emergency Alert System, only the fourth ever nationwide test that we've had. And this time it included a test of the WEA, or the Wireless Emergency Alert System, as well. And that's the alert that we all got on our telephone, our cell phone, or our cellular-enabled device. And that's really the big one, I think, probably that most people noticed. And that was really part of an effort to test the technology, make sure that we didn't, that folks were getting that alert. So in case there is a national catastrophe, that we would, in fact, be able to reach everybody with that information.
If you're someone who didn't get it, I know there have been a lot of jokes among the people who didn't get it. But if you are someone who did not, should you be doing something? Should you be contacting your cell phone carrier or MEMA or another agency?
You certainly should. And actually, FEMA is taking a lot of feedback right now regarding this. If you go to FEMA.gov, you can get more information. We have it on our Facebook page as well. But a few reasons why people may not have received that message. If your phone was off, or if you were talking on your phone at that time, you might not have received it. If you weren't getting a cell phone signal, you may not have received it. You may have an older phone you may need to upgrade. You may have a cell phone carrier who does not participate, or your cell phone itself may not be compatible. So it's certainly worth checking with your cell provider to see if they do participate and to see if your device is capable of receiving those messages.
All right, Susan. And I know, Gail, that Central Maine Power has also been upgrading its system. I mean, technology is changing everything. We're about to the year anniversary of the big windstorm that knocked out lots of power. What has changed since then?
Well, one of the things we noticed during that storm, or in the immediate aftermath of it, while the smart meter infrastructure worked tremendously very early on, providing us with some really crucial data about the scope of damage, we did see that once these devices lost power for a certain number of hours, their backup batteries would deplete themselves and they would stop communicating with us. So one of the measures that we started to take right after the storm was to make some of these key devices throughout our service area generator ready. So they are wired for portable generators. We have also increased our inventory of portable generators. So during the next storm, if and when it happens, we will have a better visibility of that system because we'll have backup power to many of these devices.
All right. John, I'm going to kind of change the subject a little bit because I understand you're just back from North Carolina.
I am indeed.
Tell me about that experience.
It was my first deployment for the Red Cross. I've been part of the organization for going on 9 months now, but at first I was a CPR instructor, and then I took on the role as a DPM or disaster program manager. So within the first few months of being back up here in Maine, I got the opportunity to go down to North Carolina and do what we call damage assessment was part of my role down there, and see the damage that was done and try to get help to people as soon as we could.
So were you on foot? Were you by boat? How did you do what you were doing?
I was based in the headquarters in Greenville, North Carolina. It was kind of on the outer edge of where all the damage occurred. And we sent our teams are generally sent out in vehicles, and they go out and they do assessments of homes. Sometimes they get out and walk around in condensed neighborhoods, but mostly just by vehicle. I myself was stuck in headquarters most of the time, coordinating some of those efforts. So I did get to go out and see some of the damage, but mostly the administrative work behind the people, making sure all the movements are coordinated on the ground.
Well, I guess my follow-up question to you is based on what you did see and based on the conversations you had with folks who are working on the ground along with you, did you come away with one, a different way of thinking about disaster preparedness, or two, with lessons that you've been, since you got back, sharing with your friends and family here, this is what we really need to think about. This, when it really happens, this is what matters.
Absolutely. I mean, seeing what was going on down there firsthand, every time I saw something, I directly correlated it to what we need to do here in Maine to be prepared for these situations. Obviously, different kind of conditions may occur here, different kind of emergencies, but the idea of being prepared for any kind of emergency is universal. So definitely not only seeing what happened in North Carolina itself, but talking to other Red Crossers down there and the experiences that they have had really got my thought process started a lot and started thinking about things we need to do here in Maine to be prepared as much as we can be.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you what some of those things are in just a minute. But
sure. First,
I want to tell our audience, this is Maine Calling. We're talking about emergency preparedness. We have experts with us. If you have questions, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Susan, I understand the Maine Emergency Management Agency has just completed a big, almost rethinking, a strategic plan. And one of the things that was really interesting to me is the idea of building a culture of preparedness. Can you talk about what that means?
Certainly. And actually, FEMA rolled out the new strategic plan, and that does affect every state emergency management agency as well. And so building a culture of preparedness, and that's really getting that message out that we all play a role in emergency preparedness, whether it's for our own individual preparedness, whether it's our friends, neighbors, family, our community. We all play a role, and we do need to take those steps as a community to determine what we can do. You know, say we're without services for at least 3 days, what steps can we take so that we're prepared for that? And then ready the nation for a catastrophic disaster is another one of the strategic goals. And that is, you know, all, as I said, when I spoke about the national test of the emergency alert system, that was one of the steps that we took. But we're also looking at how we are working with governmental agencies and non-governmental agencies so that we're able to get people back on their feet, help them recover, get them critical services more quickly.
I'm wondering, I know that in some European countries, towns and communities organize and different homes have different responsibilities that are very concrete, like you will own this. And when this happens, you will, you'll bring this set of supplies. And I think back to, in historical terms, to back when the city of Portland required every family to have a bucket for a bucket brigade for a fire. Are we moving towards that? Are we moving towards asking individual citizens to do something that would be for the common good in a natural disaster?
Well, I don't think we're getting quite that specific, but we are certainly encouraging people to make a plan, first of all, so that they know where they'll go, know their evacuation routes, know how they'll communicate with their family and their friends and neighbors if they're, for example, without cell phone service, because that's something that we're not necessarily accustomed to going without these days. Also, staying informed, learning how you will get your alerts, whether it's going to be by your cell phone or by television, subscribing to alerts, because half the battle is just knowing what could affect you and knowing when it's coming your way. And then also helping others. And there are, if you go to FEMA.gov or even our website, some great information about how you can be prepared to respond if you're the first person on the scene, whether maybe it's an active shooter incident, maybe it's an accident, or maybe it is some type of natural or other man-made disaster. What can you do until help arrives?
I know the Red Cross has all sorts of really practical suggestions. John, why don't you run us through them?
Sure. There are all kinds of resources online that you can do to educate yourself and what you should think about in these kind of emergency situations. But some things we like to promote here at the Red Cross is that it's that individual preparedness. Being individually prepared will not only help you in that situation, but it'll also allow resources to be allocated to maybe more specific needs in the area. So things you want to think about on your individual preparedness, think about what you see on the news and what people are having struggles with. So when the power's out, when we don't have any communications, you need to be able to think about being able to survive kind of on your own, per se, for like a 3 or 4 day period. So simple things that you may overlook, like having drinking water, having non-perishable food items, a way to figure out what's going on so that, you know, if communication's down, we have no TV, we have no cellular service, radio is usually up and running, and radio is one of the big things that you want to be able to have access to. So a battery-powered or hand-crank radio, first aid kits, any pertinent medications that you may need, even things like having some extra cash on hand. So remember, if the power's out, that maybe the ATMs aren't working, and we all know that cash is king out there. So if the electronics are down and servers are down, you're not going to be able to use credit cards. And then anything specific you think might be important for your family to have in those situations, again, thinking that little bit longer timeline of maybe it's going to be 2 or 3, 4 days before you can get all those necessities back.
Is that what you recommend, that people plan for maybe 4 days, or do you recommend 2 weeks?
Well, at least 3 days is what we like to stress. And again, going on our website, redcross.org, there's all kinds of information you look at, and education is a big part of it. So here up in Maine, a lot of us are very resilient. A lot of our community members have experienced, you know, long power outages, whether it's snowstorms, ice storms, things like that. So we have a pretty good idea of what we may need, but it's that educational part, to really think beyond just the simple things, you know. Dog food. Are you going to have dog food for your dog for a week or 3 days, something like that? So 2 weeks would be ideal. That'd be nice. But at least 3 days is what we strongly recommend.
And I think a lot of people are prepared for power outages because so many different things can cause them. But if you have that kind of thinking, you're not thinking about what do I need to do if I evacuate. You're thinking about flashlights and, like you said, a hand crank battery. But if somebody needs to evacuate, they may need to take a refrigerated medication and find a plan for that.
It's just like you said, you need to have a plan, and you need to think about that before something happens. So that's why it's so important to be educated on what you may need, or if you are going to evacuate, which, you know, where are you going to evacuate to? What kind of resources are there? Are you going to a family member's house where you can maybe have some medication stored there, like you're talking about? Or is it going to be just kind of on a whim? And we really like to promote that educational part. Being prepared is not just having the things on hand. It's having that plan, forward thinking, and being prepared in all aspects in that scenario.
Gail, I want to ask you a couple things about power outages. In studying for today's program, I came across some information that in all my years of reporting I hadn't thought of before, which is the idea that we need to go around and unplug appliances if we have a power outage. And so talk about why that is and what could happen if you don't do that.
Well, it is a good idea to unplug especially items that might have a big draw on the system. Because when we start to re-energize, if you have too much coming up too quickly, you know, that could have an adverse effect on restoration. And also, some appliances might have, or some devices might be very sensitive, and it's not a bad idea to have those unplugged and or on a surge protector kind of device, and that helps to protect them from damage when the power comes back on, or if there's some other unforeseen event during restoration.
So things like a computer you mm-hmm. want to unplug, but maybe something also like your dryer.
Exactly, yep.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? And I know that our cyber experts who come on, our tech experts, will tell you that you need to replace a surge protector from time to time because you don't know when it has actually done its job, sort of like a kid's bicycle helmet. Once they're in a crash, get a new helmet.
Right, exactly.
Okay. I want to ask you, Susan, if you are concerned about it's been a long time since we've had a major hurricane in Maine. I think the last is Hurricane Bob. And I'm wondering if you worry about complacency.
Well, we do, because a lot of people think, yeah, that can't happen here in Maine. And, you know, and even if it's not a hurricane, we need to prepare for those strong wind events, because we're coming on that 1 year anniversary of the windstorm of 2017. But actually in 2011, Hurricane Irene was a tropical storm when it came through Maine, and a major disaster was declared in Maine. That was actually the seventh costliest hurricane in U.S. history. That may get bumped down a little bit with Hurricane Michael, but we can certainly see the tail end of a hurricane, and that can still be pretty damaging.
All right. Well, we're talking about emergency disaster preparedness on Maine Calling. If you have any questions, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Bowdoin College, a leader in the study of the environment, educating people who will change the world. Bowdoin.edu. And UMaine's Collins Center with Portland Cello Project performing Radiohead's OK Computer October 25th. CollinsCenterForTheArts.com.
Across the country, prison discipline comes down harder on women.
You can get written up for not closing your doors. You get written up for jumping on the phone without permission.
And those low-level infractions can have severe consequences, like more time.
It was sad because I missed those years. Like, I missed when he was 2, 3, 4, and 5.
An NPR investigation this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. We still have a few weeks before we learn what book will be named the Great American Read nationally, but here in Maine, the polls have officially closed on our own search for the Great Maine Read. We're pleased to announce that Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird has been chosen as Maine's top book. Nearly 1,500 votes were cast locally in our Maine poll. Coming in at number 2 was Charlotte's Web, and number 3, Lord of the Rings. To see the top 10 Maine list and for more information, visit mainepublic.org. And click on events.
Welcome back. This is Jennifer Rooks and Maine Calling. Today on the program, preparing for a natural disaster. Joining me in the studio, Susan Falloon. She's a special projects coordinator and public information officer with Maine Emergency Management Agency. Susan is in our Bangor studio. And here in Portland, Gail Rice with the Avangrid Corporate Communications and John Ross, a disaster program manager with the Red Cross. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We have an email question from Amber. She writes, what are some things you can do to recommend that will help people who work paycheck to paycheck and struggle to make ends meet to become more prepared in the case of an emergency, such as prolonged ice storms, lack of power, etc.? John?
Sure. One thing that I've actually done myself that's pretty cost effective is each week when you go to the grocery store, just think about picking up one or two items, you know, a can of something or something that's non-perishable, and stockpile that over time. So there are some cost effective measures that you can take to be able to make yourself more prepared. As far as physical assets, that's one thing. But one of the most important things that I like to stress when we're dealing with preparedness is the education portion. You really do yourself a service and make yourself more prepared just by realizing the situations that you could be in and thinking kind of outside of the box of things that you may need to be prepared for. But as far as cost effective measures going week to week, the list that we promote on our website, redcross.org, most of the stuff is pretty cost effective. A lot of the stuff you probably have around your house. But I really suggest you don't have to go out and do it all at once. It's something that you can build over time if that works best for you.
All right. And you said you buy one thing at a time. What are some examples of the things you like to stockpile, John?
So I've stockpiled things. Actually, it's going to sound kind of funny, but like canned beans, things that aren't going to be monotonous to eat time after time again. So your traditional canned thing, you know, canned green beans, canned corn, stuff like that. Think about even things like macaroni, things where if you have the ability to boil some water that you could cook too. So it doesn't always have to be in a can. And again, think outside the box a little bit and don't go just that traditional route. Vary your options, because if you're stuck for, one or two days is one thing. But if you're eating canned and non-perishable things for 2 weeks, you're going to want a little variety in there. And so think about that when you're doing that as well.
Amber, thanks for your question. We'll go to Rita, who's calling from Harrison. Hi, Rita. Go ahead.
Hi, I was a New Englander living in San Diego and learned firsthand about earthquake preparedness. And one of the things they stress is to have a backpack in your car, not just for the first aid kit, but practical things like if you had to evacuate in a hurry, it happened to me, batteries, flashlight, blankets, infamous duct tape, trash, bags, water, and then just small things that you could actually live on for a few days. And then with children, old backpacks that they've discarded, keep one in their closet. Each one is responsible for their own, with an ID card, their name, their allergies, any kind of medication, maybe their blood type, and then any things they might need. So they're responsible for grabbing that backpack as well.
That's a great idea. Rita, you mentioned that you have had to evacuate quickly. When you did evacuate, did you have that bag in your car already, or did you do it afterwards?
Well, I'm a former emergency department nurse, so, coming from Boston to San Diego and having felt tremors along the way during that time period, I did, and I was glad, because when you're in a hurry, we had a fire that came into San Diego very quickly from up in the hills, and all the freeways were blocked, so you had to be able to move fast. I was stunned that my neighbors were just so blasé about it and hadn't really done too much, and they thought I was the crazy New Englander with the bottled water and the, toilet paper going out to her car.
I'm so glad you called. I want to ask what you used. I mean, obviously you drank your water. What else in the car did you end up using when you had to evacuate?
Well, I mean, I actually didn't have to sleep in the cars, but it was things I thought I would need in case the electricity went off, and the same things that we use preparing for a hurricane. But I mean, I think for older people, an ID card, if they get separated from their family, with the medications and maybe an extra set of glasses and allergies and things that if they needed medical care, that there'd be information for a paramedic that they'd have right there.
Great. Well, thank you so much for calling. Susan, what do you think of Rita's idea?
Oh, I think that's wonderful. Kind of like I like to say, the time to think about the flood is not when the water's rising around you. So have that go bag. Have a bag in your house. Don't forget to have a bag packed for your pets, because those are the things that we're seeing playing out in these hurricane-torn areas, that people are leaving their pets behind. People aren't evacuating when they're asked to. So those are all very important steps to take. And, putting that kit together, like we discussed earlier, don't have to do it all at once, but you can get a lot of those items right at the dollar store, too. So it doesn't have to be cost prohibitive.
Okay, Rita, thanks so much for calling and sharing your story. Susan, Rita mentioned that she was dealing with interstates that were crowded. People couldn't get out. Maine doesn't have a lot of interstate highway. If there needed to be a mass evacuation, it would really be hard. Is this something Maine Emergency Management Agency has planned for? And what advice can you give someone in that situation?
That is something that we plan for and work with our county emergency management agencies. So each county in the state of Maine has an emergency management agency. I would encourage individuals to reach out to them and find out what the evacuation zones are and what would be an alternate route if that road is washed out. And one thing we like to really stress to people is turn around, don't drown, because that often happens, especially when there's a hurricane or there's a lot of heavy rain that people think maybe there's just a small puddle and they head down that way because that's the evacuation route. And turns out that the road underneath is washed out. So we say turn around, don't drown. So talk to your county emergency management agency or even your local emergency manager and find out what the plan is for your town.
All right. And we're going to go to Barbara in Portland. I think, Barbara, you have a similar question, don't you?
Well, one is to find out what is the evacuation route. I don't know how to get in touch with the county emergency person or the Portland emergency person. So it seems like there needs to be some way that we can all find out what that is. I'd also suggest that when electronics go down, people don't have a way to use a GPS or something like that. So it seems as though having a map of evacuation routes, and preferably laminated, that people could keep in their cars or, you know, near a door so they would know. It might be two maps. One would be for automotive evacuation. The other would be, like, on foot. So that people could look at a map and figure out where it is they're supposed to go.
Susan?
Yes, absolutely. A map is a great idea because we could lose our technology, and we do encourage folks to have a paper map on hand. They are a little bit hard to find, so something that you should plan for in advance. As far as contacting your county emergency management agency, all of their information is available on our website, maine.gov/MEMA, maine.gov/MEMA. And each county, as I said, does have an emergency management agency. So if you are in the Portland area, which I think you said you were, then that would be the Cumberland County Emergency Management Agency. And you could look that number up as well.
Good luck to you, Barbara. And thank you for calling and joining the conversation today. We'll go to South Portland and Kevin. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
Hi. I've noticed that we frequently hear that we should have a portable radio of some sort. And that's all well and good so long as information pertaining to the circumstances is coming over the radio. But it doesn't. And who better than Maine Public to put that kind of information out? Yet, it never seems to happen. And I was just wondering about that. I remember the ice storm, and we went days without power and turned on public radio and nothing, but we had the Commonwealth Club. It would be nice if Maine Public could jump in on that issue.
Well, thank you for that feedback. I appreciate it, Kevin. I want to go to back what we were talking about earlier, Gail, and the lessons learned after the October storm. You talked a little bit about what CMP has done to internally boost its battery power, bought generators, things like that. But how about working with others? Has that changed?
What we learned during the October storm was that in some municipalities and counties, were better than others in terms of following processes that have actually been defined in state statute for emergency response. And what we needed to do was to work better and educate people in various towns and counties. The York County Emergency Management Agency has always done a great job in terms of its organization and its response and working with municipalities. And what we did in the months following the storm was to meet with various other EMAs, county EMAs throughout our service area, and also municipalities, and get them up to speed on the process for getting their, you know, communicating their needs up to us. And what many of them did not know is that municipalities should be communicating their needs, for example, for a road to be cleared of utility lines and poles. Those need to be routed to the county EMA, and those county EMAs are able to prioritize those needs and get the priority list to our local service centers, where we can efficiently, you know, work on the most urgent needs first and then work our way down the list.
Susan, is there anything you want to add to what Gail's saying about coordination?
Yeah, we spent a lot of time over the last year and even leading up to that windstorm working with, so, you know, we have a lot of governmental agencies, but non-governmental agencies as well. And so we did have the folks from Central Maine Power as well as Emera Maine participating in all of our conference calls, either live at the State Emergency Operations Center or on the phone. And we worked with them to help coordinate the restoration process a bit if there was a critical need. For example, I know that there was a pharmaceutical supply company that was without power, and we worked to get them back online because they were providing a lot of pharmaceuticals for the area where they're located. And I know that both utilities were great in having somebody right there with us, somebody on the call, so that when the county directors called in, if they had an issue, that CMP was right on there and they could immediately get to work on dealing with that situation. So I think it was a really positive relationship with emergency management and the utilities. And I think that we've only continued to grow that since, because we've looked at, hey, what, you know, this worked out pretty well, but what could we be doing better? And we started implementing those changes.
We have an email from Janet. She writes, "You recommend having extras of all your medications. One thing that has become a major problem for patients with cancer or other intractable pain is that new laws restrict refills to the day it is due. No extras are allowed. Therefore, people who have these medications cannot prepare for this in any way. This could become a major problem for these patients. Has the legislature made any provisions for this problem in the law?" Does anybody know the answer?
Not to my knowledge.
I don't, but I would encourage folks to reach out to their legislators, but also to speak with their doctor and find out what the plan is, or if they're working maybe with a home health agency or a hospice agency, that they have those conversations, because the doctor would be in on that conversation as well, and figure out exactly what they would do in that situation.
All right. We also have an email from Jeannie. "Thanks for a timely topic today. Going into various towns throughout Maine, I have seen signs that say evacuation route, but most of the signs are pointing in the direction of a larger town or city. For example, a sign in Bucksport points towards Bangor. One outside of Belfast also points toward Bangor. It seems you would want people moving out of populated areas, not towards them. Can you explain the reasoning?"
I would just say that, for example, I know that if Hancock County, all of Hancock County got evacuated, that those folks would be sent to the Bangor area, because we do have large venues and places where they could shelter. But it's really going to depend on the type of situation and what direction it's headed. So although those routes are in place and those locations have been identified, it's really critical that folks listen, you know, determine where they're going to get their alerts and warnings, and that they listen closely during the event, because we're not going to want to send them into an area that is equally or even more impacted by that situation. So that route could change depending on the event.
All right. Well, we are talking about emergency preparedness on Maine Calling. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet us or post on our Facebook page. We are going to take another quick break, but first, a word about tomorrow's program. Join me for a conversation about CMP's proposed transmission corridor through Western Maine. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. Nome Landscapes, dedicated to enhancing outdoor living in Maine with installation, design, masonry, and maintenance, gnomelandscapes.com. And the Maine Association of Nonprofits, uniting and strengthening the nonprofit sector through management training and advocacy, nonprofitmaine.org.
Coming up on the next Commonwealth Club program, John Kerry has been a soldier and an anti-war activist. He was a long-serving U.S. senator and a candidate for president. Most recently, he served as President Obama's Secretary of State. Throughout his long and varied career, he has learned a great deal about partisanship and bipartisanship, American leadership, and service to his country. He'll tell you all about it on the next Commonwealth Club radio program.
Commonwealth Club coming up after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock. Are you interested in traveling to Sicily? Maine Public Travel is headed to Sicily next May on another of our cultural explorations to this fascinating island. You're invited to join Morning Edition host Erwin Gratz and other friends of Maine Public. Our Many Flavors of Sicily 10-day tour will involve sightseeing, tours, lectures, and music that will offer insight and understanding of Sicily and its people. Learn more about Maine Public's Sicily tour by visiting our website, mainepublic.org. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, tips on preparing your home and family for a natural disaster. Joining me, Gail Rice with Avangrid Corporate Communications, John Ross with the Red Cross. I knew I was going to do that. And Susan Falloon with Maine Emergency Management Agency. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Jeremy writes on Facebook, living through the ice storm shaped my thinking on preparedness, and I've always been a rational preparer since then. I shun the broader prepper movement, however, is impractical and irrational. Our grandparents and great-grandparents all prepared for hard times, and I think following their example is a good idea. For those of you who remember the 1998 ice storm, it's hard to believe that was 20 years ago. But what lessons did we learn from that, Gail? I believe you and I worked together on that 20 years ago. How has that shaped not just the emergency planning community, do you think, but the people of Maine?
Well, I think it's amazing. Yeah, we learn lessons from every single storm that happens, big ones, little ones, medium ones. But I think, you know, one of the things that still stands out to me from that ice storm was how people were helping their neighbors all the time. And it was just absolutely incredible how there was one, in fact, one gentleman called or one of your callers talked about the radio not having enough information. Well, one of the Bangor stations actually devoted, I think, all of its on-air activity to the storm. And they were having people call in saying, hey, I have some extra firewood. Who needs firewood? And somebody else would take him up on the offer of firewood. And it, you know, little things like that, but a lot of people helping one another. That's one of the things that I really came out of that with was how people were helping their neighbors.
Meredith on Facebook writes, we spent 6 months last year on St. John and the Virgin Islands cleaning up after Hurricane Irma. One thing most people forgot in their planning was cash. When the power is out and the internet down, it is impossible to use a credit card. We recommend small denominations, as you wouldn't want to pay $50 for someone to fix your flat tire. So, and you mentioned that already, John, cash, but that's a really good tip. So have some fives and some ones.
Absolutely. My wife gives me a hard time sometimes that I do stash some cash in the safe, but I think it's imperative. It's one of those things that's often overlooked by people, you know. A lot of things, you know, we were talking about cell phones earlier. We take a lot of things for granted, and we don't realize in these emergency situations, little things like things exactly what the caller was saying is small denominations. It may be nice to have some cash, but you need to be practical about it, too. And little things like drinking water and things, again, we often overlook that become real handy and very much needed in those situations.
All right. We're going to go to Joanne calling from Bridgeton. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm a former emergency department nurse, and I just wanted to follow up on what Susan said about the Cumberland County Emergency Agency that provides until help arrives. It's a free class, and I took it. I found it exceptionally helpful. Many of the people that it was given in the library and many of the town people came, And I think people are very interested in helping in an emergency, but they don't often know what to do, and sometimes they more or less get in the way. So I just wanted to be sure everyone knows about that at cumberlandcounty.org. As I said, you can sign up. It's 2 hours, and I found it very well done and had a lot of great information that even I didn't know.
Joanne, thank you. And Susan, are these kind of classes going on throughout the state?
They are, not necessarily in every county. Each one is different. However, if folks should reach out to their county emergency management agency, if it's not being offered there, they may want to find out where it's being offered. They might be able to go to another county. But also there is a version of this online that's free to take, and that's at FEMA.gov. And when you go to FEMA.gov, just search for Until Help Arrives, and there is a video training that's very informative. I've taken this one myself, and that's available free to anyone, and they can do it from the comfort of their own home.
All right. Thanks for your call, Joanne. We'll move on to Waterville here, and Deborah. Hi, Deborah. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to add that a couple of years ago, I was given a wonderful little object called a Lucy Light. It's an inflatable disc. So when you blow it up, it's about 4 inches tall and 6 inches across. It has a little solar panel in it. It has three switches, a extra bright, a bright, and a flashing light. When you're not using it, you take the air out of it. It weighs about an ounce, costs about $20, maybe even less, and it lasts for 8 hours. I was so impressed with this device that I got one for everybody in my family, developed by a couple of women grad students at Michigan State for homeless people and anybody else who might need a lightweight light and not have money for batteries. Great device. I think you can get them online, sporting goods stores, just a really great option in an emergency.
And when you say Lucy Light, spelled L-U-C-Y?
L-U-C-I, I believe.
Okay. Thank you, Deborah. Is this something any of you are familiar with?
No, I'm pretty up to snuff on all the emergency preparedness gear, but I haven't heard of that one. I'll definitely have to check it out later.
Thanks for calling, Deborah. You know, we've been talking a lot about what to do if the electricity goes down, if the cell phones go out. But usually we do have cell phone service, and usually we do have electricity. And John, you say there are a lot of apps that can be really helpful these days. What do you have on your phone, and what do you recommend?
I definitely recommend having some kind of mapping app. You can obviously go online and go to whether you have an Apple phone or an Android phone, you can go to the Google Play Store or the Apple Store and just browse around in there. You can even search for emergency preparedness, different kind of apps. The map's definitely a big one, but we at the Red Cross, we offer a whole variety of apps. So if you go into either one of your app stores and check it out, we offer everything from emergency notification to first aid apps and all kinds of useful information that you can use in these situations. And then beyond the apps is also on our website, like I mentioned before, redcross.org. We do have a lot of handy information on there and access and information that you may want to kind of help you start building that plan. Again, can't stress enough that in these emergency situations, the biggest asset to yourself is to be prepared ahead of time. Much like someone spoke to before, you know, we don't want to think about the flood when the waters are rising. You don't want to be thinking about what you need to do in these emergency situations when it's happening. You want to be prepared for it ahead of time.
Susan, are there apps or other technology that the Maine Emergency Management Agency would like people to add to their phones?
I have the FEMA app on my phone. It's free. You can download it. Just search for FEMA. And you can subscribe for alerts and notifications for up to 5 different locations. So you could choose 5 different Maine counties, or maybe you have a summer or a winter residence and you'd like to add that to the mix. It doesn't have to be just in Maine. It could be anywhere in the nation. And you will get weather alerts, and you'll also get specific preparedness information for that location as well.
Okay, and what about you, Gail? What do you recommend?
Well, Central Maine Power Company still does not have an app. However, we do have a mobile-friendly website at www.cmpco.com, When you look that up on your mobile device, the mobile site will generally come up by itself. But that has our outage information. You can report an outage using that mobile site. You can check for outage information. You can look at the outage map. That works pretty well. So we encourage people to use that. And also, we encourage people to sign up for our outage alerts service. It's a free service, and you can get updates on outages affecting your home or business by voicemail, by text, or by email, or any combination of the three. And that's a nice service to have. It's very handy. I use it myself, and I find it very helpful.
It used to be that your bill would come with a magnet that you put on your refrigerator door with a phone number to call if there's an outage. Do you still want people to call if there's an outage? Or with technology today, does Central Maine Power and do other power companies know that there's an outage? You don't need to call anymore.
We still like people to call or to report it online. Either way works well. 1-800-696-1000 is the number to call, or www.cmpco.com. Click on Outage Central, and you can report online. Either one of those works well. Our smart meter system does tell us things, but we do like to have people report it as well.
All right. John on Twitter says, what about using alternative fuels indoors? Can you discuss safety around that? I'm not 100% sure, Susan, what John means, but I'm guessing using the gas stove when the power's out?
Well, we always encourage people to follow the manufacturer's guidelines when they're using an alternate heat source. And that goes for generators as well. Make sure they're properly installed. Make sure they're in a well-ventilated area. If you're using something like a kerosene heater, make sure that it is made for use inside your home, or don't. But be sure to read those manufacturer's guidelines. If it's an old device and you don't have them, you should do some research before just firing something up in your home, because we don't want somebody to cause a fire, but there's also the danger of dangerous fumes, and we have had some carbon monoxide poisonings last year during the windstorm last year. We had no fatalities like we did back during the ice storm of 98. So we do think that people are becoming more savvy. However, there were some minor carbon monoxide poisonings where a couple of folks did go to the hospital. So we encourage people to make sure that not only are those devices in good working order, but they are made for use in the area that you're using them in.
Okay. And John, you know, we're focusing most of this conversation on large natural disasters, talking about things like ice storms and hurricanes. But my understanding is the vast majority of what the Red Cross responds to is house fires.
It is. I would say on a daily basis, the high amount of things that we respond to are home fires. So you got to remember that the Red Cross responds to any kind of disaster, whether that be a single family home fire all the way up to some large scale natural disaster. And that's our primary responses in Maine are for home fires. We respond to usually around 300 a year or so. And it's one of our main mission staples here in the state, all across the country as well. But here in Maine, we're fortunate enough to have to worry about, ice storms once in a while and snowstorms, a little bit of hurricanes. But the majority of preparedness that we want to concentrate on as well as those major events are the singular events every day that people can really put some time and effort into it and make sure they're more prepared for those situations.
And we have the state, Joe Thomas, the state fire marshal, on the program every year, and he just emphasizes how quickly a house can go from a small fire to fully engulfed, that the kind of materials we use in fabrics for couches, the curtains, the drywall burn so much more quickly than they used to. Just get out if there's a fire.
Absolutely. That's one of our main staples of our programs. We have the Home Fire Campaign, which is it's multifaceted. Not only do we offer free smoke alarm installs, but we also do an educational portion to it. The average time you have to get out of a home is right around 2 minutes. So we really want to put forth, again, being prepared is having a plan to what happens if your home does catch on fire. Much like you said, it's basically get out of there. But again, being prepared is being educated, and that all goes into making your home safer. So definitely get the smoke alarms and definitely have a plan to evacuate if need be.
All right. We're going to go to Judy in Bodenham. Hi, Judy. Go ahead.
Hi. I am concerned that there are people who, as I said, have not gotten into the 21st century yet and don't have smartphones or perhaps even internet access. And related to that, I think it's important that radio stations provide information to people who may have a battery-powered radio that they're able to use when the power goes out and don't have access to other sources of information.
Thank you. Thank you for that call. I appreciate it. So we just have a minute left. Susan, final thoughts as we wrap up hurricane season and head into winter.
Well, I'll just say that a NOAA weather radio can help you get that information. And we all also work with Maine Public, Maine Emergency Management Agency does, to get emergency alerts out to folks. Also, check your insurance and make sure you have adequate coverage. That is the first line of defense in a disaster.
All right. And you, John, your final thoughts.
Just that the Red Cross greatly appreciates anybody that can volunteer their time to help. You see on the news every day the impact that we're making, especially with these big disasters, but we also do that here at home. So if you're interested, check out redcross.org or go to your local chapter and express your interest. And thank you, everybody.
Well, in what ways are volunteers used?
In every way you can think of. We, much like myself, I am an employee of the Red Cross. I was deployed to North Carolina, but the vast majority of people down there were volunteers. So we had, at one time when I was down there, we had 22 volunteers from Maine working on that hurricane relief. But we do stuff every single day. Disaster action teams that respond to these home fires that we were speaking about. All kinds of ways people that can get involved in their communities and ways to make them safer and be more prepared.
All right. And your last, Gail?
Well, just know that we watch the weather every day. We stand ready to respond if anything causes an outage, whether it's the weather, whether it's a small furry rodent or anything in between. And also, as our friend Jim Wright has said many, many times, no line is safe to touch ever. So if you see anything down, you need to stay clear and stay safe and report it to us.
And Gail, I understand this is the last time you're going to be on Maine Calling talking about emergency preparedness.
It is.
Your well-deserved retirement. And thank you for making time for us in your final weeks on the job. It's been a pleasure to work with you over all these years in all different capacities.
And likewise, it's been great working with you folks as well, helping to get the word out about important things like emergency preparedness and just your general balanced and fair reporting on all matters of news. So it's been great working with you as well.
Well, I hope it's a terrific ski season.
Thank you.
Gail Rice is with Avangrid's Corporate Communications. Susan Falloon, the Special Projects Coordinator and Public Information Officer with Maine Emergency Management Agency. And John Ross, Disaster Program Manager with the Red Cross. John Keimel ran the board today. We had additional help from Rich Tozier in Bangor. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the show, the debate over the CMP proposed transmission corridor in western Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.